Hey, welcome into Gun Talk Nation. This Gun Talk Nation is brought to you by Savage Arms. And today on the show, we have a New York Times bestselling author, a guy who has been in the world of, I would call, mainstream media, and also gun media and kind of everything in between, but really sharp fellow on the show, Frank Miniter. Frank, welcome in.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
Man, so much to cover here. And I actually forgot to mention actually what your real job is currently is you are the editor of America's First Freedom, right?
That's right, the NRA's political magazine. I'm the editor-in-chief.
So before we started this, I was just saying, well, you won't have a shortage of things to cover for a while.
No, these are scary, big, tumultuous times we're coming into. It's almost too much to cover. Yeah. Right now, it's you're just wondering where Biden is going to jump first. I think probably the PLCAA is a big one that he wants, but we'll have to see.
Let's talk more about that. I mean, for people who are sort of half paying attention, explain what that is and why it matters to them.
Well, that's the Protection of Lawful and Commerce in Arms Act. That's a shield for gun manufacturers and dealers that stops them from being sued when a third party, a criminal, takes one of their guns and uses it in a crime. And it's like someone taking a Chevy and running someone over. Well, you don't sue Chevy. In this case, you don't sue the gun maker. They're not liable for a legally sold product. If they broke a law, they are liable. And actually, though Biden and a lot of the politicians on the left have claimed over and over again that law protects them from civil liability for all sorts of things, it doesn't. It just protects them from that from a third party using it for a criminal misuse. So if you take away that law, which is what Biden has said he wants to do, when he actually called gun makers the enemy, and he said that during a primary debate, called them the enemy, he wants to pull that away. You pull that away, and we're back again to where cities and just an average person can sue these gun makers on behalf of what a criminal did, on behalf of the victims for the crime, which would then really force gun manufacturers to then have to litigate all of those kind of things, which would just drive them into bankruptcy. There's no way they could stay making the firearms we love if they have to defend in all those massive lawsuits all over the nation.
Well, it's really, like you explained, well put, it doesn't mean that they cannot be sued. And they'll try to say, the Democrats or liberals will try to say, oh, well, if we don't, you know, they're immune. No, they're not immune to lawsuits. And if they make a defective product or they have other reasons there, but if they make a legal product and it's not defective and they sell it in a legal way, I mean, if it's misused, it shouldn't be the fault of Ruger or Glock or Smith & Wesson if a criminal, a murderer does something with a product. And that's like you said, that's true for if they drive a Chevy into a crowd of people or a knife or a Louisville Slugger, for that matter.
Exactly. In fact, the PLCAA, the authors of it went out of their way to spell out that gun manufacturers and dealers can still be sued if they make a product that fails, if a gun blows up in somebody's face, or if they break some kind of law to illegally sell that gun or ammo or whatever. They could still be sued for that, but they can't be sued for that third party, that criminal misuse of their product.
And as you said, if they have to fight every lawsuit from a city level to a state level to a national level, they really can't. I mean, despite what people would think, we have these names in our industry that are iconic: Remington, Smith & Wesson. But ultimately, these companies, they're big, but they're really not that big. I know that we used to say, and I don't think they're even, Toys R Us isn't even around anymore. We used to say the gun industry as a whole is about the same size as Toys R Us when you look at the revenue from each year. And so they can't afford to fight all these battles, especially when these cities and states are using your tax dollars to sue them.
Right, they're hard metal manufacturers. I've toured a lot of the factories. They're making a product on a very low return. They're not getting return clothing makers make and so on. And I've tried to compare the firearms industry in America, you know, dollar for dollar, to another industry to give people an idea just how big or how small they are. And it was hard. Even Disneyland was way bigger than they were as far as the dollar value. It was just very hard. Two-thirds of the guns sold in America are still made in America, which is an incredible thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, despite what Hollywood characterizes gun makers, they're pretty small.
Right, exactly. And like you said, the different margins and all that. So, I mean, it's a niche thing. It's a very niche product. Yes, there are a lot of gun owners and a lot of guns in the country, but it's not like, you know, tennis shoes. Not everyone owns, you know, five pairs.
it's a competitive market too. Absolutely. Yes,
absolutely. So Frank, we've started this new year. We've got a new president. People are wondering, what's next? And they're also wondering, what should I do? One of the things that I've been looking at is some of these groups that the gun control industry have started up over the last several years, the Moms Demand and some of these groups that are fairly grassroots. I see them being very active, and I wonder if our side is being as active, if they're paying attention here. I mean, what are you seeing?
Well, they're not grassroots. Moms Demand, okay, it started grassroots, but it was bought up by Bloomberg, and it's a part of every town. It's funded massively on that scale. They don't think in grassroots. They don't have millions of members around the country like the NRA, all advocating and pushing a certain direction. No, they even during the last election, were running ads on healthcare and other things not related to guns because they didn't want to energize America's 100 plus million gun owners. So they're not actually a grassroots. You look at the NRA, and it is grassroots, it's state by state. I mean, going to this last election, our grassroots organizer was extremely active, especially in the swing states. I went and interviewed those people to see what's going on and put stories in. And I was even shocked as a guy who works for the NRA of just how much they were doing. That's grassroots. That's the real kind of thing. So I don't see that. It's big money being pushed down, and a lot of politicians who don't want to lose those Bloomberg dollars. He donates a lot to different campaigns and a lot of causes, and they don't want to lose that money. He's the big fat cat behind a lot of what's going on right now. So if you look and say, okay, what's going to happen in Washington? They're going to have a hard time passing a lot right now with a 50-50 Senate. I know Harris can come in and be the 51st vote to break the ties. So a lot of pressure then goes on Joe Manchin. Well, what will Joe Manchin do? He's already said he's not going to get rid of the filibuster, that he's not going to pack the Supreme Court. God forbid that could end our Second Amendment. He said these things. Whether he holds true to them or not, I don't know. But he is up for election in a couple of years in a state that just voted more than 2-1 for Trump. So he's got to be, you know, looking at that and wondering about it. So that's a big linchpin right now in the Senate, what will happen. Because if they got rid of the filibuster, then, yeah, they could get rid of the PLCAA and do another assault weapons ban or so many other things.
Yeah, and you're right. I misspoke. When I said grassroots, I guess I was – you're right. They are not 5 million members like the NRA is. But you have a lot of – and they're much smaller – you have some active participants in this, the whole Moms Demand thing. And I guess I'm just trying to motivate our side to be as active as they can be. And a lot of that starts at the state level. Everybody's talking about Biden and all that stuff. What about the state level side and people getting involved on that side of things? What have you been seeing?
Well, there's 9 states now considering constitutional carry. And Utah and Tennessee are kind of leading the way, Montana as well. So that's moving forward in a lot of different places. That tends to, the left tends to go crazy over that. They think that it's going to lead to Wild West shootouts and all sorts of nonsense. When you look at all the studies, and especially in the states that have passed constitutional carry, what's it up to? Depends how you count them, but it's 16 or 17 states, because some are from a residence only and so on. But it's a lot of states that have passed it now. You look at the crime statistics from those states, it hasn't jumped up. It hasn't gone up at all attributable to the constitutional carry. It's still only a law-abiding person is legally allowed to carry that firearm. He's just using him or her using their constitutional rights to do so. So that's moving forward. So there's actually good stuff happening that gun owners need to stay aware of and stay behind to push those things forward and push them through. But we need to stay active also on the national level. There is a 10-seat margin, you know, give or take, there's still, I think, right now 3 seats up in the House. But a 10-seat margin is pretty thin. Yeah. There's a bunch of those people who are in these districts, mine included, I'm in New York, that flips back and forth between red and blue. Those people are worried. They are going to pay attention to how they vote, depending on the number of calls and emails they're getting on certain issues. So, I mean, sign up for those NRA grassroots alerts and so on. Just pay attention. Be out there because there is still a lot we can do. It's not all lost, but these are very troubled waters. Don't get me wrong.
Yes. One of the things that I was trying to communicate to some of our audience the other day was, look, I know social media, everybody's spending all this time on there and they're trying to share this and comment on that. But if you could spend a little bit less time in your echo chamber, perhaps, and at least make those three calls weekly to your senators and your representative to check in, say hi, and kind of let them know where you stand on some of these issues. I feel like that can be more productive than the social media argument section, right?
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of chiefs of staff reporting, you know, in the House and in the Senate. And I've asked them that question, and their media people that question. What matters when that phone is ringing? Does it really matter? And they say, oh yeah, you know, we keep a tally, and that goes to the senator or the congressman. There's a lot going on one issue. It does worry them, especially if there are people calling from their district. It absolutely worries them. It's amazing how small town that the House and the Senate can really be, especially the House. You can walk in there, just one for one metal detector, you're walking down a hall with little signs on the doors telling you what district, what state they're in. You walk up, you can actually walk right into that room. Often you look to your left and there will be the congressman sitting there. Mm-hmm. You think there'd be more security, more walls between you and them, but it's actually a very small town feel with pretty small staff considering, you know, 15, 20 people in the average House member's office. So if those phones start ringing and emails start coming in, they're keeping that tally chart, it does have an effect.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because it's absolutely true. And if you've never been to DC and walked those halls, it is pretty amazing. You go, wait a minute, I can just walk in here and talk to them? Yeah, pretty much.
Exactly.
And like you said,
if you're from, you can go see your own congressman much easier than you'd realize, especially from a small state or rural district. It's not that hard. You walk right in and say, hey, I'm a constituent, I vote, and I'm in such and such town, you know, show your ID. It's a pretty good chance if they're in and, you know, so on, but it's a pretty good chance you're going to get a meeting.
And like you said, if there's a dozen people in the office and they're hearing on a particular issue, word gets around. I mean, it's 12 people in an office, right? I mean, they're going to say, oh man, it probably doesn't even take that many calls or emails to make an impression. I mean, if that one particular office got, I don't know what, 100 people, that's going to, in a week, that's going to kind of raise a flag or some antennas on a particular issue, wouldn't you think?
100 is a lot, actually.
Yeah.
The number of calls they're getting, you know, it tends to be the most unhappy person that calls, or I work and I run a magazine, who sends in the letter. We do get some great mail there. But it's that person who's activated who tends to do it. So gun owners, we vote for this freedom. We're more active, and it's why we scare elected officials more than in most other groups in this country, because we do want our freedom. We do understand what that freedom means, and we are willing to stand up and be active about it.
You're right. Yes, we a small but mighty group for sure. But you know, it's not that small. But I guess the real active group, there's always the core group that really gets in there. Hey, Gun Talk Nation is brought to you by Savage Arms. And one of the things we're seeing a lot of these days is interest in long range precision rifle shooting. And Savage has you covered. They've got the 110 Elite Precision and a whole line of precision rifles. And the 110 Elite Precision is the pinnacle of Savage's 110 designs. Time-tested rifle action, but this is kind of a chassis system, adjustable core competition chassis from Modular Driven Technologies, MDT, full-length ARCA rail to attach, tritium nitride coatings. It's built for a lifetime of extreme elite precision. So if you're thinking about getting into the long range game, check out the 110 Elite Precision and all their different models. They even have one in left-handed like that. Check them out at savagearms.com. You guys are covering all sorts of stuff over there at America's First Freedom. Any stories that come to mind or some things that you guys have been covering that's kind of on your radar that are really interesting, or it seems like your readers are getting excited about?
Yeah, we look at the current issue, our February issue, and there's a man on the cover who happens to be a black man from Detroit who runs he has a gun store, but he does an annual event that brings in women. And last summer to train them to use their freedom. Last summer he had over 2,000 people, and there's photos showing them lined up around the city blocks to get in there to get this training and get their personal defense firearms and so on to go through this process. So he's on our cover with his arms crossed saying, with the headline saying, "We want our freedom." And also inside the same issue, is a feature on the black disenfranchisement that happened after the American Civil War, mostly in the South. And it's from a professor at Fordham named Nick Johnson, who you probably know. He wrote a book called Negroes and the Gun. But it's very, just the way he goes through it, it's quoting people from the time, and it's very fact-based. It's showing how actually repeating arms were used so often by them to chase off lynch mobs and other issues, the Deacons of Defense to protect people in the Civil Rights era, and so on. It's just that I think that's all too often is the left is saying that those rights aren't needed by certain parts of our society or only used by certain parts of our society, which isn't true at all. This is a right for all of us, and it's important to articulate that message.
I love it. I love it, Frank. I mean, yes, they try to hijack this and say it's a bunch of white old men. Well, guess what? Not exactly. And we know this past year we had somewhere in the neighborhood of about 8 million new gun owners. And I think the studies that we're seeing, they don't necessarily fit the whole old, white, or male demographic, right?
Yeah, we just did an interview with Lauren Boebert, the new congresswoman from Colorado. She's the one who stood up to Beto O'Rourke, went to his thing in Denver and stood up for her freedom, screaming at him. Well, she didn't scream. She was very articulate, and it went viral. Now she's in Congress, and she's unapologetically standing for her freedom and has insisted she's allowed to carry in the halls of Congress, which has been true for a very long time, that they've been able to have firearms on them, and not inside the where they vote in the Capitol building, but in their offices and in their congressional offices. In fact, you know, years ago, I found this out. I was doing a story actually for Outdoor Life magazine. I went in to interview Colin Peterson, who was a Democrat. He was like the last pro-gun Democrat. This is incredible. Who lost in this House race this past November. But he was the last openly pro-gun Democrat. So he's out. But I went to his office in the late 90s, sat down with him. And he said, "You're from Outdoor Life? Oh, let me show you my guns." He went and he opened his closet and he grabbed a bunch of shotguns and rifles out of there. And then he told me this story. He was actually hand loading in his office shotgun shells because pheasant season was coming. And a Secret Service comes in because the president's going to speak next door with their dogs. And they think he has a bomb and they raid his office and take his stuff. God. I mean, you know, that's how it's been. They can carry, and she's standing up for that. It's just wonderful.
That is fantastic. I love this. Loading shotgun shells in his office. Oh my gosh. So, and now I guess it's Nancy Pelosi is saying, well, we're going to put up metal detectors and stuff. We're going to change that whole thing.
Yeah, they're making them walk through them now, which has gone back to where I think they just fined actually Boebert because she's refusing. Mm-hmm. So that's still being blocked. You know, she lives behind walls there in San Francisco. She has armed security, armed guards there in Washington. She lives a very, very protected life, yet she wants to tell the rest of us we have to disarm. It's just outrageous.
Well, I think that's common for a lot of those folks who said you don't need a gun. They lead a very protected and disconnected life from the lives that a lot of us lead in the U.S. They don't understand our lifestyle. They don't understand our hobbies. And they make a bunch of assumptions about it. And then they try to control our hobbies and lifestyle. It's crazy. So, Frank, what else? I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I live in New York. And I don't live in the city, but I'm close enough to it and have a lot of friends down there. And I used to work down in the city. And a lot of those friends now who were never pro-gun, a lot of them weren't anti-gun, but they were pretty ambivalent about it. They're suddenly calling me and saying, what do I buy? What do I do? Where do I go for training? How do I get there? The whole thing has changed. New York has become such a violent city. What's happening down there? It's hard to even do the video right now up in Fox News of a group of people just pulling a guy who just got off a bus and beating him and actually taking him, stripping him naked. They're leaving him right on the street. That's down in Chinatown, in downtown, which is a very safe area. Manhattan was a very safe area of Manhattan. This is where this is getting all over this country. People are realizing as they're confronted by this danger that, wait a second, I do have to protect myself. So it's no longer just Republicans. Of course, it's not just white. It hasn't ever just been white people. It's everybody who's understanding that this freedom is out there. And how do you pick it up? That's why gun sales are going crazy. Ammo, you can't find it. And just try finding a course right now. It's hard. I mean, NRA instructors is NRAinstructors.org is the place to go. You'll find local courses, but it's with COVID it, and as much as they're being booked, it's hard to even get in. It's so popular.
Yeah, it's tough, and all these new gun owners, we need to do our part to help them out and get them involved in the guns, in shooting, and get familiar with it. We don't want people to buy a gun, it sits in the box up in the upper shelf of their closet and it never comes out. Number one, they're not going to know what to do with it if they need it. And then number two, if you actually get out to the range and get a little training and do some shooting, you may discover that this is actually a fun hobby and it's something that you can do weekly or monthly or whatever. And of course, selfishly, as in the gun industry, they of course would go, cool, maybe they'll buy more ammo and buy a second or a third gun or whatever it may be. But I think all of our listeners, it's on us to reach out, because probably if you're listening to Gun Talk Nation, you are known amongst your friends and family as the gun dude or the gun gal. And so people are calling you, you've been getting calls. Hey, thinking about getting a gun. What should I get? Well, say, invite them to the range, invite them out, invite them over to your house. If they just bought a gun, to go, hey, you want me to take, a half hour and just show you a few things, some safety tips, all that type of thing. And we are, and have always been, the crowd who is the gun safety group. We are the gun safety folks, not the gun control groups who try to say they're gun safety. Right, Frank?
Yeah. I take a lot of people on their first time out, and I go through a whole training thing before we even go to the range. But one thing that always gets me is I've never seen one of them, when you give them that safe, controlled experience, they know what to do. The first time they pull that trigger, watch their face. They just light up. It's fun. They're just, wow. And they feel empowered. Mm-hmm. I can do that. I can control that. If I know the rules, I know the gun safety, if I follow these steps, I can do this and safely have some fun and then protect myself later on and my family later on. This is an empowering, wonderful thing. It's just, you feel it well up inside of you. You can see it again and again.
You're absolutely right. And the empowerment part, like you're saying, for a lot of people, they're nervous about guns or they think they don't like guns because they just don't know anything about it. And if you can get them a little bit of education, maybe, like you said, a little bit of safe hands-on experience with it, now it takes that mystery out of it for them. And now they know what the heck's going on. They go, oh, it doesn't just go off sitting there on the table like I was told. Jeez. So Frank, beyond the politics and gun rights side of stuff, any particular guns that you've been shooting or enjoying or interested in the last several months?
I finally decided to get good at skeet, and it's been just an Achilles heel for me forever. I've always been into rifle and pistol, especially rifle. And I've done a lot of three gun, but I finally decided, I can actually work in three gun, the shotgun part pretty well, but that moving target has always been an Achilles heel for me. So I'm finally breaking 22 to 24 birds each time. I've gone through this whole process of, I tried trainers and I just didn't like much of what they had to do. I finally just got a gun that fit me, and just figured it out and got it right. It's amazing how many people would screw me up on the range telling you where you are in a bird and where that isn't very helpful. What I found was just learning how to move up through the bird and follow through with a gun that actually fit me finally. So that's been for a while, that's what I've been up to.
That's awesome. Yeah. We're all through this past year, we're all, trying to get outside more, and we're seeing that in every single industry, whether it's bicycles or tents or whatever. And obviously people are buying guns and getting out there that way, probably skeet. And I've been doing the same thing. I've been shooting a lot more sporting clays this year. Probably that's a good place to be, I think, because yes, ammo is scarce, but birdshot, shells, maybe a little easier to find perhaps. But you said you tried a shooting coach, but that didn't really help, huh?
Yeah. His techniques, He just all over the place, in my opinion. And it was an L.L. Bean school with a guy who pretty much knew what he was doing. But I think he was a person that didn't know how to work with a guy. He was used to working with either first-time shooters or with women. And he's working with a guy who's done a lot. I just need a couple of things broken. Now, a couple of bad habits that I'd built up. Honestly, as a grouse hunter, that's just pick up and shoot fast. Kind of, yeah. That's not lead and follow through like you do on pheasant or on ducks. I had some bad habits that need to be broken down. He just wasn't the guy to do it.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned the other important part is getting a shotgun that fits you. I mean, it makes all the difference in the world, doesn't it?
It does. I'm not the biggest guy. You know, I'm 5'6". And the guns always have a slightly longer length of pull than I can. I have to compensate for them. I ended up getting a Benelli Super Sport that I was able to fit myself. And now I have several over-unders that I've gotten fit professionally. But just getting that first gun that fit, something the confidence builds, something you can start to learn the techniques you really wanted to learn.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you don't aim a shotgun, you point a shotgun. And the rear sight on a shotgun is your eye. So you need to be able to, when you mount it consistently, it's the same every single time. You're not fighting the shotgun with, like you said, length of pull and craning your neck to the side or forward or whatever it may be. And now you can start worrying about focusing on that clay, focusing on that bird and the swing and the follow through. And that makes all the difference in the world. In fact, my dad went through this exercise over the last few years. Is like, I have a lot of shotguns that I really like, but I only have a few that actually fit me. And you start coming around to going, actually, those are the ones I like shooting because I actually hit stuff with it. And I know I have, you know, this gun or that gun that's pretty or it, whatever, but maybe I just need to get rid of it and get, you know, a few more guns that actually fit me. It makes all the difference. And I think a lot of people, they get a gun, certainly shotguns, and you just start shooting and you go, I don't know. I seem to hit all the left to right crossers, but not all the right to left crossers. Well, that probably has something to do with the fit.
That's right. And the range through this COVID thing is just such a happy place to go. You're outside, so people aren't freaked out, and you're just away from a lot of this stuff. People don't want to talk politics there. So that's a negative kind of thing to bring in a positively charged environment. So it's just this positive, happy. I love going to my club and hanging out with the guys and shooting. It's just it's a different world, a world apart from other things. And that's a club that's not that far from New York City, but it's like it could be anywhere. You could be in the middle of Wyoming. It's such a, the atmosphere there is so different.
Well, it's a good point. When you get to a shooting club and a shooting range, generally the people are pretty like-minded. And so it's kind of, there's a comfort level though, I guess.
There's a happiness there. Absolutely. And if you go to any range, really, especially the public ranges, and there's a range safety officer and you're a new person going there, I think that's a big intimidation factor that happens because there, if you do break certain rules, which, you know, there's safety rules for all of us, you are going to be thrown off that range pretty fast. And that's intimidating because they don't know what to do. I mean, I don't know how many times I've been muzzled on a couple of ranges I'd rather not go back to again by people who show up that way. And it's, and I have a hard time blaming them. They haven't had someone to mentor and bring them in, which is why I like doing it and why if someone reaches out to me, I always go ahead and do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't pass up a chance to be a mentor, to teach people about shooting and gun safety and that kind of thing because they don't know. They don't know, Frank. I mean, I think you're right, exactly right. Going to the gun range, just that step one, can actually stop people in their tracks. A lot of them go, man, I don't know what to do. And we've actually tried to do a few videos about that on some of our content platforms to just try to educate people a little bit more of like, okay, now what? I'm going to the gun range. Do I load my gun? Do I, you know, do I take it out? Do I carry it in? How do I do all this? Because nobody wants to look stupid. They want to feel like, you know, I know what I'm doing. And I think it's okay when you get there to go, hey, this is my first time. I need help. And I think most gun ranges and most range safety officers will try to help you out and steer you in the right direction. What are some of the things that you do when you first bring someone to the range, Frank?
Well, before that, I hand them a plastic gun and go through the safety rules and make sure they handle that gun the way they should be handling a real firearm. And if it's necessary, I'll make them actually have that gun for a while. Here's an anecdote. It sounds off, but here's an anecdote on this. I was in South Africa once at the South African Wildlife College. They were starting a PH school, and they had these 18 students in there, and none of them had any experience with firearms. They're all from South African cities, and they didn't grow up with PHs for fathers and that sort of thing. And none of them knew what they were doing. We decided to do a walk in the bush, and they took several side-by-side rifles and to take us into the bush where there were some dangerous game. There were rhino there and other things, and I kept getting muzzled, and I kept seeing their fingers on the trigger, and I kept seeing all these problems happening with these students who wanted to be PHs. So I finally pulled the head instructor aside and I said, hand them some plastic guns, hand them some fake guns, hand them sticks if you have to, and make them keep those muzzles in the right direction and have triggers, keep their fingers off the trigger until they actually are going to shoot the firearm and so on. Go through those until they're just embedded in them. And he got a little angry with me at first, and then he looked at what was going on, because I'm the American there, and the South Africans especially don't want to hear that from an American. But he came around to it, and by the end of the thing, he looked at it, he goes, you know, you're 100% right. I should have done that in the first place. Now as I train them, they're going to get handed toy guns until they could show me that they can handle that toy gun like you should handle a real gun.
I love it. Yeah. There's so many people that when they're not used to handling guns, one of the things that I see all the time, you've probably seen all the time, is they just automatically stick their finger on the trigger. They grip a gun, whether it's a rifle or a pistol, and they just stick that finger right in the trigger guard, right on the trigger. And they just don't know. You just got to, and I love the idea of giving them a plastic gun, getting them used to, no, the finger goes straight, and teaching the right way to do it. Be safe about it. Frank, what else is on the radar for you guys? Anything that you want our audience to be paying attention to in the next several months?
You know, I'm looking at the Biden administration and all the people they've just brought in. It's every single department that he's filling, from the attorney general right on down. These people have deep anti-gun credentials. They absolutely want to, even they're on the healthcare issue, they want to make gun control into a healthcare issue and treat it like it's an illness or something. Like everyone who owns a gun has some disease they need to cure. Literally is what they want to do. So every single department that he's doing this in, so you're going to see not just the executive actions, which is he's up to, and not just him try to push the legislation through, which I'm not sure if he can or not, where the House and Senate is made up, but you're going to see all these different departments from ATF to Health and Human Services and so on, enacting policies and doing things that are going to be very anti-gun. So that's where I'm focused, is watching who these people are and what they're going to do.
And they try to be sneaky about it a little bit with some of those curveball, end-around ways to get at you.
Oh, they sure do. They'll ban guns in all these funny little ways and go after every little nuance. They'll fund anti-gun studies at universities in a massive way. In fact, that was even happening under Trump. John Lott actually came into that division to try to stop that after he kept complaining to Trump administration, don't you realize what's going on? You're funding these anti-gun studies constantly. They didn't really see it. What's he doing? The person running that program, it wouldn't sound like this is what he's up to. But that's what's been going on for a very long time. We've actually, to the tune of millions and millions of dollars, have been funding anti-gun studies. They should be nonpartisan. They should be looking for answers to help us solve things instead of going out there as a preordained findings in order to, they're mining stats in order to take people someplace to a piece of legislation they want. So then they can then pull out that study, the media go crazy with it, and then politicians go, see, it's science. We have to do it. Look, yeah, it's science. And they'll try to put it into law.
Yeah, working backwards from a predetermined destination they're working towards. So Frank, how do people find, what you guys are up to at First Freedom? And then also you're an author of a bunch of books.
Yeah. Our website is a1f.org, America's First Freedom. I'm known for the Ultimate Man Survival Guide, New York Times bestseller. I did one for the workplace as well. I've done one novel, and I have another novel coming out this summer called The Deep State Revolution, that goes into a lot. I think people are going to be surprised by it. And the novel before that was called Kill Big Brother. I'm constantly writing, probably too much. I write for Fox News, here and there. I used to write a column for Forbes. So yeah, I'm here and there.
Awesome. Frank, thanks for being with us. Always good stuff. And I hope that our audience, paid attention. Pay attention. Next 4 years is going to be interesting. Thanks for being with us, man.
Important. Thank you, Ryan.
All right. That's it for us. We'll see you next time on Gun Talk Nation.